Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, a podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And we're back with a second podcast of the week. This one not about international rugby. That one's already in the feed. If you're expecting that, go listen. It's there already. This is our midweek domestic podcast, the famed MWDP, as we discuss all matters domestic rugby. I'm in the rugby dungeon with JB.
Hello, Tim.
And down the line from the Egg Chasers TMO shipping container is Phil.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hello. Now, we had a chat on the international podcast about the kind of standard and quality of rugby. It is what we were talking about with, you know, sort of quite tight kicking affairs and maybe lacking a little bit of class and skill. Do you think that's being seen across the board a little bit, and it could potentially be rustiness or even the conditions and the weather? What do you think?
Yes and no. Certainly yes for some teams. Sadly, the teams which I happened to watch this week definitely applied to them. But looking at some of these scores, I mean, there are some huge scores that have come through this week, and that is not through kicking.
Correct. And probably the most notable performance of attacking intent came from Harlequins.
Yes, it did.
Wow.
who were spectacular against maybe a questionable defence from Northampton Saints, who had nearly 50 points put on them at home, which is worrying when you've just signed your director of rugby, who's had an underwhelming couple of years, to a longer-term deal. Maybe not the best time.
Yeah,
that they haven't won at home since...
Not this calendar year.
I was going to say, I'm not sure it's this calendar year. No. Or it's early this year anyway. It's something like 9 or 10 straight defeats at home.
Well, do you remember when, you know, which is unheard of for Franklin's Gardens, people stopped showing up? And this is towards the end of the Jim Mallander reign. And then, of course, Chris Boyd comes in and he does a very good job. They reach the playoffs and...
Win the Anglo-Welsh Cup or whatever it's...
The thing.
The Premiership Cup.
Yeah, whatever that thing is, they win that. And it's looking better. I don't know. I do not think they're nearly as bad as this score suggests. I don't even think they're as bad as their winless home record suggests. But that's a difficult argument to make. I mean, they've got all the pieces. I don't know what's wrong with them.
Yeah, I really don't. All I know is there is something fundamentally wrong, because they've got the talent.
Yeah.
Like at the end of last year, when we were looking at their... They made the mistake of playing the 1A side and the 1B side. But you were looking at the teams that they were putting out, and the 1A side and the 1B side were both good sides, albeit with a question mark over their tight five for the scrums. Besides that, they are good teams.
Where's Nairavoro?
He's not playing.
Don't know.
What's going on there?
He is out of form. I mean, I can just confirm he is out of form. I don't want to go too much into it, but... He's just not playing well, and the people inside the team know that. They do struggle to get over the game line. I mean, that is their problem. Their rugby ability is unquestionable. And it's interesting, in this game, when they started playing well, it's when they came through the middle, and what's the big second row called? Pronounce his name for me.
Ribbons, Rutuni, Yawara.
Yeah, he just cuts straight through the middle. That's what they need more of. It's difficult. But they need to get over the game line. That is the fundamental thing which they're missing. And by the way, they've got great coaches too.
I mean, they do have great coaches.
Sam Vesti is one of the best attacking minds in the Premiership. They just need to get over the game line.
He didn't start this weekend, but just the difference when you watch Northampton now Do you remember how much we were talking about and how excited we were getting about Rory Hutchinson?
Yes.
How class he was with the ball, how incisive he was, how creative he was. And it's just stifled. I don't know whether it's just the platform isn't there. Well, and it's as simple as that, or I don't know. I'm not blaming it on him, by the way. I'm just saying that that is...
Sounds like you are.
No, that is... his the fact he's not playing with that same languid fluidity, it just speaks to the...
Well, it's same as
the way the team's playing.
Same as everything in rugby. It's a game about bullying other people. If you're getting bullied, you can't play. You know, it's same as MMA fighting. You know, if you're...
To go close to the mic. That's all right. Let me get back in your...
Yeah, let me just assume my normal position.
Yeah, there you go. Is, that's better.
There we go.
Paint me like one of your French girls.
Exactly right. Yeah, it's kind of like MMA or one of the fighting sports, which is, you know, if you're getting punched in the face over and over again, you're unlikely to be able to execute your skills. That's exactly what is happening to Northampton. They're getting overpowered and overwhelmed. Worryingly for them, though, I don't think Harlequins particularly overpowered them. They outplayed them rather than anything else.
Yeah, well, let's be positive on Quinns then.
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't expect this Quinns team to overpower a huge number of teams this season, but what they can do is they can really play. Marcus Smith is just sensational.
Isn't he?
And it looks like he's found a good partnership with Esther Hazen, who will punch holes and punch a beautiful hole with an offload for Marcus Smith's twinkling try. And also, he's got the experienced heads of Brown and Kerr outside him and inside him to keep him on the straight and narrow. And if they keep playing like this, they'll be all right.
Can I just speak up for Mike Brown? Was absolutely class. And I'm still convinced he's the best English fullback. I know he's 35, whatever now. He's absolutely class.
35.
Danny Kerr was absolutely class. Those two experienced guys doing exactly what Quinns would want those two guys to do in that team. They were so good. And Andre Esterhazen, he gives that team an identity. And you talk about that Quinns can play. Yes, they absolutely can. But in the way that sometimes Manu Tuilagi can do. He's very Andre Esterhazen's very presence on the pitch just creates space for other people.
Yeah, he's a focal point, isn't he? He's like a more dynamic Jamie Roberts for Marcus Smith.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, Smith is so phenomenally talented. I mean, it's hard. He might be the most naturally gifted of all the tens available to England. You know, that doesn't mean he's the best, but he's probably the most naturally gifted.
Hey, we could be talking about him 10 years from now, the Maradona of rugby that we couldn't answer on the last podcast.
Yeah. I tell you what, he would do more. I mean, he's such a clean-cut, nice young man from the outset. It wouldn't really harm him too much to get into a bit of trouble now. You know, really carve out an identity.
Did we not talk about Sippers in relation to the Maradona of rugby?
We did.
There's
just not... Sippers doesn't have that hard working class edge that Maradona had. Do you know what I mean?
It's a different kind of trouble that Sippers gets himself into, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I can't imagine Sippers playing for Napoli, for instance. You know? So yeah, if Marcus Smith gets into a bit more trouble, become a bit more edgy, that'd be miss a few training sessions, I think he'd probably be a better player for it. So yeah, that's my advice to all young tens, actually.
Start hanging out with Marlon Yard and Tiny Temper a bit more.
Yes, perfect.
Yeah, now you're talking. But yeah, I exactly. It was what I liked about Quinns, and conversely, what we're not seeing from Northampton is that they're playing the way you think about. When you close your eyes and think about Quinns, that's how they were playing, and I really liked that. And yes, you're right, JB, they need to do the bullying and not have the hard edges when it's required. But having that sense of identity and what you're about and letting loose, absolutely love that. And it's exactly what Chris Boyd brought to Northampton when he first arrived.
Can't recapture. Scott Baldwin's a good signing for Quinns too. Mm. He's underrated. He's a good, hard guy. I do wonder if Quinns maybe got... they did well not to get completely derailed by Exeter, because that's what Exeter do to teams. They completely derail you. So, yeah, really good, really, really good win for Quinns.
Can we talk about Exeter, actually? Are they more dominant now than they were last year, even without all those players and even just a few weeks after finishing a season.
I mean, this is mind-boggling, isn't it? This is utterly mind-boggling.
They've absolutely beat down Bath.
I've only watched the highlights of this, but it looked like it was a thorough bullying. Like the scrums that I saw, Exeter were smashing them. The rooks, the mauls, the pick and goes. It was just a total destruction of that Bath pack by the Exeter pack.
Demoralising for Bath as well, because that's what you talk about identity. That's their identity. They do. Yeah. They want to be the team that does that to other people.
Well, they've got an English front row, as in England capped front row.
It's a remarkably poor performance. This Bath are my team to get into top four. I'd say maybe fourth behind Sale and Exeter and whoever else it is. But you know, Bath are right up there. So far, they've been absolute garbage. I mean, hot garbage. They didn't look interested against Newcastle punished them. And 3 points. 3 points. I mean, I get it. They're not spending any money. They're well underneath the salary cap. None of those things are true. None of those things are true. They've lost two players to internationals, right? Faletau, who didn't play much last year at all, and Underhill. Is there anyone else I'm missing from that?
Who, sorry? So, Faletau, Underhill.
JJ, obviously.
JJ,
and yeah, okay, Watson. So they're all losing four. But they've got McConaughey, De Glanville, Cochrane, Singer. I mean, they've not got bad replacements.
Will Stewart, they're losing.
Yeah, again, they've got the team. If they want to be winning the tournament, which I think with these players, maybe they can't. Maybe these are just the wrong players. Maybe they are the right players in a certain environment, but altogether, it just doesn't work.
I think the question is not on the players, because I think they've got a quality squad with or without their internationals. The question for me is whether Hooper, who was handpicked and he's been kind of groomed for this position, whether it is the right decision at all.
But yeah. They look to have turned a corner with Neil Hatley coming in, and they've got all their ducks in a line, and they were looking pretty ominous.
I mean, people talk about Neil Hatley like the second coming. People who have played for him. So, in fact, your brother's worked with Neil Hatley, right?
He played with him.
Oh, Irish.
Irish.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not making this up. He's incredibly well liked and well thought of. In fact, you don't get as far as him coaching with England unless you know you're that kind of individual. I'm with you, Tim. I thought that they turned the corner, but this is unacceptable. Yeah. I mean, this is a defeat where you mustn't have tried. I don't care what anyone says. You mustn't have tried.
But you look back at the end of last season, their last two games, they went to Saracens playing a second team, really, because it was slap bang in the middle of the Europe campaign for Saracens. And Bath just needed a result and they couldn't get it. They then got through to the knockout stages because of Sale's troubles, and the scoreline was almost the same playing Exeter in a game that really meant something, the semi-final of the Premiership. So this is not just like snuck up on them. The last four games have been, well, dreadful by their standards.
Yeah, you're right, actually.
I wonder, is it a mindset thing? Do they believe that they're better than they are, or do they only like playing out of a certain pattern or a certain way, and if they get disrupted, there's got to be something.
I mean, I know this is a good pack, this Bath pack, and they will back themselves to be physical. And they've done it. They did it last season on a number of occasions. They were physically dominant, and they've come up against a pack where they are not getting physical dominance, and they just don't know what to do.
Yeah, yeah. And their backs play like they want to be Harlequins, and maybe they can do that if their forwards get, you know, go well up front. Maybe that's it, and maybe they're just playing the best team at beating people up in the league, which is European champions Exeter.
Yeah,
but then we saw it against Newcastle too, didn't we? We saw utter capitulation, people running away from contact,
or just not wanting to be there. You know, so I struggle with that one too.
And from Exeter's side, it's hard to say anything negative at all. In fact, there's nothing negative you can say about them. They just march on continually. Sam Simmons, another two tries, making it five from two games.
Fantasy rugby draft, dynamite.
Who has him in fantasy rugby draft?
My brother picked him up. Nick picked him up second pick in the draft. Someone else had a pick above him, and they went for Semi Randrandra. And when
ridiculous.
Well, I just thought, what are you doing? I couldn't believe Sam Simmons wasn't number one pick. But because I did have a chat with my brother earlier in the day. He said, who would you pick first? I know you've had conspiracies about me and him in cahoots, but he did say, who would you go first? And I said, you won't get him because he'll be first pick, but Sam Simmons. But no,
yeah,
couldn't believe that. But
yeah, Semi should only miss one more game, really, so that he should then be for the rest of the season. But yeah, Sam Simmons already looks like by far the best player, the best pick.
And in the real world, he's just a ridiculous, ridiculous specimen.
Yeah, it's nice for England to have him in reserve, like reserve.
Yeah. I mean, how many players have to go down injured before he gets called up?
Well, maybe Dave Ewers, Don Armand, those guys too.
Ludlam, another Curry.
Ludlam, Earl. So he's got Ludlam, Earl, Willis, Don Brand, based on the last squad as well.
Yeah, then a second Curry, a second Willis.
Yeah. Yeah, probably about six or seven people have got to get injured at the same time.
Do you know what I think really cooked his goose? I like that saying. Where's it? I wonder where it's from. Anyway, I think it was a game against France where they lost, and he played at seven. And his ball carrying, he just got melted every time he went into contact. Now, I don't blame him for getting melted, but he did, and he's never recovered from that in the eyes of Eddie Jones.
Was he not playing eight then, though?
Seven, I'm sure it was.
He played eight against Italy. I don't know where he played against France.
Yeah. I think Billy played too. I think Billy played and Sam Simmons. Because I remember it. I remember it like it was yesterday, Tim.
You loved that game so
much. It was one
of
my favourite games. France absolutely done. Where were we? Oh, that's right. Madrid with 250 listeners. Fancy forgetting that. Yeah, it was a marvellous game. Marvellous game. But yeah, just look at Sam Simmons. I mean, Sam Simmons is obviously a great player, played sevens, a great runner. He's up against the guy who you would say is probably the best guy when it comes to being a running number eight, Zach Mercer, and just completely outshone him.
So I'm looking at the game now. So it was March 2018. Do you know what position he played?
Sam Simmons?
Yeah.
Sure, it was seven.
No. So he didn't actually start.
What?
He came off the bench.
With Don Armand?
For Nathan Hughes.
Did Don Armand come off the bench as well?
He only played in Argentina, Don Armand.
No,
he did. Oh,
he did play in a Six Nations game, yeah, but not this one.
Yeah. What, was it the one? But I'm sure he played this one.
He played played the Super Saturday the year we were in Romania.
I think Don Armand played against Ireland.
Yeah,
off the bench.
in that Super Saturday
game.
Well,
when England lost, like, they were on for 10 in a row or something, or 11, like some stupid number in a row.
The Super Saturday in Romania, where was it with a controversy with France, Wales, and England played Ireland, and Don Armand was involved then. I think. Might be wrong.
Interesting.
But in this game, anyway, so he obviously then went to eight, because the other two back rows were Courtney Laws and Chris Robshaw, neither of whom were going to eight. So Simmons played eight, and this is in my head what his failing has been, that he has been seen as an out-and-out eight, and I just worry that the highest level he's perhaps not big enough to play eight, certainly not if you're being compared to Nathan Hughes and Billy Vunipola.
But what about Ben Earl?
Whom are 20 kg heavier than him. Yeah, but then Ben Earl's interesting, because Ben Earl, he does play in the other positions a lot more. He plays 6, 7 and 8 and plays them at club level, whereas Sam Simmons only plays 8.
Yeah.
In my mind, they're 1A and 1B. They're the same player. They're both so fast, so strong, low centre of gravity, but they're not 125 kg. Simmons, if Simmons plays one game for Exeter at 7, I think so, then you'd get called up.
Yeah, what they do, extra, it strikes me as they do this, and I don't know if this is on purpose or what, but they tend to not protect Sam Simmons, but they surround him with two enormous blokes. So because you've got the two enormous blokes on the side, and they did it as well with Kvesic. Kvesic in no way is a seven, right? Sorry, in no way is an eight, but eight. Played a lot of eight.
Yeah, when Simmons was injured.
Yeah, so they put the seven at eight, and then had two enormous, presumably Zimbabwe heritage players.
Yeah, it's a system thing, I guess. I'll tell you what was a system thing, and clearly this is straight off of the training ground, and it's great when you see moves from the training ground work in matches. I really love to see that. And so it was great to see that training ground move from Tom O'Flaherty.
Steve Parrott, friend of the pod, assures us that that was a rehearsed training ground move.
100%. I don't doubt it at all whatsoever. The odds, yeah. So you can imagine Rob Baxter, right, lads, getting the whiteboard out. Or Ali Heath would have done this, attack coach. Joe Simmons, cross kick. Tom O'Flaherty, volley it over the defender. And score, simple.
Well, to be fair, Brian O'Driscoll did it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Brian O'Driscoll chipped over and volleyed his own chip and then caught it and scored. Legend.
That was a hell of a try. That was, by Tom O'Flaherty's standards, he scored some incredible tries. That was unreal.
That was incredible.
So as things stand, Bath are at the foot of the table with 1 point, joined by Northampton. I cannot imagine that is a situation that's going to last for long. Well, maybe it is. Maybe that's it. Maybe these are the two worst teams in the Premiership. Two games gone. Let's write off these two. Completely. Gone. Done. End off.
Perfect.
No more. So I had an idea, and obviously we didn't do it because we're not organised enough. But my idea was, let's build a second 15. So get the first 15 of each one of these teams, discard them completely, and see who has the strongest second 15, because that will tell us who's going to go down, because this is going to be such a monumentally hard year. I really believe that.
Mm.
On that assumption, Bath are not going down, because Bath have just got too many.
Oh, God, no,
points,
no. They're 0-2 at the minute. They'll be all right, of course.
Northampton are not quite so straightforward a proposition, but they should climb. I'm trying to work out who's got the worst second 15 team. That might have to be Newcastle. But based on this week's result, I don't think Newcastle are going anywhere fast either.
Well, on that basis, I'd say it's predictably Newcastle, Worcester, Irish, Leicester.
But you would say Newcastle by some distance, no?
And I would throw Gloucester into that, just because of the number of players that they've lost and not replaced like with like. So in multiple positions, their second team or second string players have become first string players.
Yes, that is true. On Gloucester, do you notice that they didn't play Danny Cipriani?
I did notice that.
I did, and a hell of a win.
And, and Lloyd Evans, again, I've only seen highlights of this one. He looked a threat in his own right, in the way that Sippers, you would always think about Sippers as a fly half when he was a youngster coming through, that threatening the line, taking a gap and taking some space himself, and Lloyd Evans did that.
So I was chatting to a Gloucester player last week after we finished our podcast. I was like, mate, you must be gutted. Like, it didn't go your way. And he said, no, actually, we're pretty positive. We thought that a lot of things happened which were unlucky, but we'll put it together and we'll go well. We're really upbeat from that performance. I was thinking, there is no way that... I mean, that just must be putting a brave face on it, because they lost against Leicester. But judging by that, Wasps are not bad, and this is a good Wasps team.
Yeah, just on that, friend of the pod, Ollie Paul, put it perfectly when he said this week, Worcester beat Irish, who beat Leicester, who beat Gloucester, who beat Wasps, who beat Bristol, who beat Worcester.
Yeah.
It's already, this is turning out to be quite an interesting and very unpredictable season, except for Exeter.
Yeah, yeah. That's the omnipresent. So, with two games in, we're going to need to see more of these teams, but bloody hell, that's impressive by Gloucester.
Billy Twelve Trees was absolutely awesome. Not just because
fantasy rugby draft.
Just not because he scored 47 points for my fantasy team.
Oh, that's more than my entire team, probably.
It's not far off, actually. I still lost my matchup. But anyway.
Scores are going to recalculate, Tim. I wouldn't bank on it yet.
Not enough.
They're going to reset in the morning.
Not enough.
Did you watch the Friday night game, the curtain opener?
Yes.
Now, this was one of the games, going back to my question at the start of the podcast, this was the game that I had in mind when I was talking about the quality and entertainment value of the games. This was pulling teeth.
I mean,
this is a dreadful game to watch. Great win for Newcastle and well played.
Fantastic win.
Where do you even start? I mean,
you start with the positive. This game reminded me of that resilience that Newcastle had when they beat Montpellier and Toulon. Was it Toulon? They beat two French teams.
Yes, you're right.
In the European Cup.
They won
the first two opening rounds of their Champions Cup. After they did really well in the league and got into the top four and then got panned, didn't they, in the playoff semi-final. But then the next year they were in the Champions Cup and they won their first two games in it at home.
That's right, yeah. They did amazing things. They did really, really well.
And they won in the dying moments going for it. And they've clearly, albeit there's some different personnel there, they've still got that Dean Richards DNA of just being hard as nails and really tough and back themselves.
I mean, I have to say, this loss was coming for Sale. I honestly believe that. There's only so much standing upright with the ball in one hand and trying to hand off other huge men in the chest that you can do. And this, fundamentally, is the Sale game plan. So when I heard that Jono Ross was not playing, I thought, that's bad. Jono Ross is amazing. Jono Ross is an incredible player, holds the whole thing together. But they're not really going backwards in what they do well. You know, their physicality is still going to be right up there, isn't it? You know, they just add in an extra Dupree and, you know, see what happens. I mean, that's not bad. By anyone's stretch, having Dupree and Curry in a back row is fine. But it was just too much of the same thing. And I don't know what the missing ingredient was.
A line-out.
Oh, my God, the line-out was... Yeah, the line-out was not good. The line-out was terrible.
Line-out for a start. It was absolutely awful. But they've got all these massive 20 stone lumps.
They're not playing as a unit.
But that's how I looked at the Sale pack and went. I went their lineouts. Bearing in mind their hooker, brilliant player around the park, can have bad arrows. I looked at the locks and the back row and went, they are going to get cleaned out of the lineout.
Who's jumping? I said this about them last year. I said exactly this about them last year. They are enormous men, and you watch them in training before the game, and they look like they struggle to get off the ground. Now, legitimately, you've got Dan Dupree and Ben Curry, who will get off the ground. Dan Dupree and Ben Curry are not number one lineout jumpers by any stretch. Cobus Fisa, he's not enormous. Well, he is enormous. He's 6'5", but you know, as a primary lineout source,
nope.
Not at all.
James Phillips, no.
Bryn Evans was holding that line out together for a long, long time. They need to address that. They need to manufacture space somewhere to get their big lads up to go forward. I don't think they solve these line-out problems anytime soon, unless Lude gets back in the team, which will be, I think, March is his due date.
Oh, dear.
Ooh. Yeah. But that's one guy.
They'll be all right. The one thing that surprised me about Sale, the one area where I thought, oh, they've got two people in every position that are absolutely class, but what's happened to their wingers? Like Denny Solomona looks like a man, in the way that we talked about Naira Voro out of confidence. Denny Solomona looks like he's lacking confidence.
I think on the wingers, it's an interesting one. I just think the wingers aren't getting enough space. I have no issues at all with Hammersley, Luke James, or Solomona. All good players, just missing a bit of form. Newcastle got...
Putting Marlon Yard on the bench, though? I don't... Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, 100%. I would say that Newcastle got into them. You know, they made them play in a way that they're uncomfortable with. Even with that, Sale, in reality, should have won. The reason they didn't win this is because they left it too late. And it's the same as anything. If you don't make sure... by putting more points on the board, you're always going to be susceptible. If you leave it to one score game and Toby Flood nips in the corner because two of your players...
Sorry, that's disrespectful. You have to call him Talupe Flood.
Talupe Flood, yeah. Yeah, they made a rod for their own back by not getting enough points on points on the board.
But you're not going to get as many points on the board as you should if you don't have a line-out. But that said, how good was that try at the end?
It was amazing. It was amazing. I mean, Ben Curry's on the ground, someone else is on the ground. They're defending with 13. But that's your problem because you didn't go up by enough points. Yeah. That's completely your fault. It's nobody else's fault. It's your fault. So it's just such a frustrating loss for so many neutrals out there.
But two from Newcastle. That's like if it is going to be a very competitive and topsy turvy league season, then you can imagine relegation may be what 35 points, something like that. Yeah. Newcastle are nearly a quarter of the way there, two games in.
I interviewed Gary Graham this week. He is a...
Scotland's Gary Graham.
What an interesting bloke he is. Will that be on this feed or the other feed?
Whatever.
Whatever. So you might have it on here, you might have it on Egg Chasers, but I tell you what, funny bloke, good interview. I'm actually quite glad that they won this because I quite like Gary Graham. But
Gary Graham, I don't know if he got the official man of the match. He probably should have been man of the match. I thought he was class.
He's playing well, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's so physical. Is he? He must have. Last time he was in the Premiership, I can't remember him being this big and physical.
He's bigger.
He must have put on 5 kg or 10 kg.
Yeah. Well, so I'll let you into a little secret of what we were talking about. But he was saying he only started the game when he was 15, and he moved up. From playing from Carlisle, and played for one of the Scottish teams, who's, I can't remember who, but his dad was coaching at the time. And he was saying that in the Scottish regions, or Scottish teams, they have a draft system. So all the pro players are allocated to all of the level below. So if they're not playing, they drop down. And he's saying, like, yeah, so Kellogg was playing against him. And he was 19. He's like, yeah, could not wait to get off the flank and try and smash Ali Kellogg. And I was thinking, this is exactly why you made it as a pro player and I languish at level 8.
Yeah.
Because I could not think of anything I'd rather less do
than
try and smash Ali Kellogg.
When I used to chat to my brother, it was exactly the same. I remember playing in like university, varsity games, massive crowd. It would be the nighttime game, huge crowd. And remember my first year of that, I was bricking it. I was absolutely bricking it. I remember the day when Nick got called up by London Irish from Nottingham. They had a couple of injuries and he went on loan there for a month and he got his Premiership start that weekend against Leicester. I was chatting to him, sort of thinking, oh my God, I might have to nurse him through this a little bit. It was just like, oh, I'm absolutely buzzing. I can't wait. It is a mindset. You're absolutely right.
It is a mindset. I was like, bloody hell. You wanted to do what? To who? How? I couldn't think of anything worse.
19 years old. Come on then, Kellogg. Yeah, fair enough. But he's so abrasive.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was very, very good in this game.
Yeah.
And in the Bath game.
And he might... explain against Bath, I thought he was superb. It might also explain one of the reasons that people are kicking, because if he is your number eight, I mean, in this game they had who's the seven? Collett,
yeah.
But Newcastle could put out Will Welsh, they could put out
Mark Wilson,
and they could have him at eight. Who wants to risk having the ball taken off you on that plastic pitch by running it in aimlessly? You've got to kick.
Yeah, but this was one of my frustrations at Sale. There was a huge, huge number of kicks in this game.
Yes.
Both teams seemed like they didn't know what they were kicking for. And it was just kick, a half-hearted chase, drop four men back, wait for the ball, kick, half-hearted chase. And
yeah, it's the chasing which was disappointing. But I go back to this, to the point which I've just made, really, which is when the back rows are so dangerous. They're so dangerous.
I don't know if the kicks were put spot on. Fafter Klerk has not been the Fafter Klerk.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But it's So, Jay, I get that point. It's then you need some next-level thinking to say, OK, we're going to kick, but how do we want to kick? Do we want to put it on the ground? Do we want to bomb and get men under it to compete for it? Mm. Do we want to ping them back into the corner?
Little nudge over the centres.
Do we grubber? And there seemed to be, from neither team, there seemed to be any of that level of thinking and that level of inquisitiveness to say, well, what we're doing is clearly not working. Can we try something else? And both were just hoofing it as high and as long as they possibly could.
So does that speak to game? There was an interesting article in the rugby paper at the weekend where I think it might be Nick Kane. Anyway, his article, he was basically talking about I think he described them as control freaks, which is quite an emotive way to do it, but just basically very, very controlling coaches. And he was levelling this accusation towards Eddie Jones and towards Steve Borthwick as two examples of very, very controlling coaches. Steve Borthwick said in a press conference in midweek, he interrupted a question and said, "I'm not talking about players' fitness or availability or selection. You'll find out the team when I announce it. And I'm not answering any questions on it," which I think ruffled a lot of people in the press because they're like,
because they're special.
Well, no, because I think they're going, no.
Sam Peters wrote an article, something like, the gist of it was something like, where there's darkness, there's no accountability. And, you know, he has a point about the UK political process. But he wasn't writing about that. He was writing about rugby selection or rugby training.
Well, what I would say is also it's not recognising the symbiotic relationship that the press, broadcasters and rugby clubs have with each other when it comes to promoting the game and to try and go all, "I'm not saying a word, shut up, I'll tell you, you'll know when you need to know" kind of thing, and "I'm not answering any questions." I don't like, and Eddie Jones was also doing it, he was saying, "We shouldn't have to announce our teams 2 days before. We should do it. We should announce a squad. We should announce the squad, and then 2 hours before kickoff, we'll announce the team." Now, there are merits to that.
I don't have a problem with that.
There are merits to that. I guess my Nick Kane was just saying, making the point about how some of the biggest characters in the game, in the coaching level, are very controlling, and I was trying to dovetail that back towards Phil's point about they're sort of robotically kicking without the engaging the brain about the reason why.
I would say about Sale, they're not that team. I mean, they might have been in the past where, you know, they were threatened with relegation every year. Every other year, sorry, yes. And, you know, needs must. But actually, this isn't that team. This is an exciting team which likes to carry the ball, which likes to play a bit. I can't explain the performance, to be honest. Yeah.
But Newcastle, absolutely, well, fair play. And stuck in there.
Yeah, and it reminded me a bit of the Newcastle that got to... They finished fourth, didn't they? Three seasons ago, they finished fourth.
Tell you what, Burrell's looking like a smart signing.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about that.
I wasn't either. Fair play. But brilliant. 2 stone down, playing closer to his natural weight.
Almost Big Luth.
Yeah, nearly Big Luth.
Biggish Luth.
Big Game Luth.
too right.
As much as a lot of neutrals didn't like watching Toby Flood go over, it was quite good to watch him go over. I mean, I thought these two were going to get absolutely battered by Van Rensburg. No part of it at all. It just shows.
You joke about Talupe Flood. Do you know what Toby Flood's full name is?
I do, but I can't remember it. It's something like...
Toby's a middle name, isn't it?
Like Toby Goodwin, something.
It's Tobias because it's German.
Tobias, so he is. Tobias Gerald Albert Cecil Leven Flood.
Love it.
Wow.
Say it again. Tobias.
Sounds like his name.
Gerald
Albert Cecil Leven or Liven Flood.
What do the letters? Is it like a... What is it?
TGACLF.
It sounds like he's been named after every German capital ship of World War II.
Fair play, Newcastle. Well done. You're back and against all the odds. And they must be loving it as well because We didn't expect this.
No.
Nobody expected this.
They should. I think they should have been on two losses.
Who have they got? Yeah, who have Newcastle got to start their return to the Premiership? Bath away, Sale at home. Oh, welcome home. Welcome back.
But next, they've got Wasps.
Yeah, they travelled to Wasps.
Wasps got soundly beaten.
They did.
Yeah.
They did. So, that would bring us on to Bristol, which I did not see. But, depleted team.
No, what all we really need to talk about with Bristol is the prodigious talent of Yohan Lloyd.
England's Yohan Lloyd.
Unfortunately not. He's been capped, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. Wales is Yohan Lloyd.
Wales is Yohan Lloyd. And as he should be as well, because he's Welsh. But there you go. Go listen to the last podcast for me talking about English clubs developing Welsh players for them. Wales being like the cuckoo of rugby.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Taking English jobs.
I'll lay my eggs. Yeah. You look after it and raise it. I'm off.
Exactly. Taking English jobs, eh?
Not so much that. But what a talent that kid is at 19. He is.
He's going to be good. No, he is good.
Sir Charles who? Max Malins who?
They could save a lot of money by getting rid of Charles.
That would be a big saving, yeah.
Then they could spend it on loads of other worthless players. How many worthless players could you get for £950,000?
A lot. I mean, this pack, there's not a huge amount of stardust in this pack, but other than Yohan Lloyd's twinkling feet, it was the pack that did the damage to Worcester. And it was multiple driving maul and penalty tries.
So that makes...
Ground it out.
That makes no sense to me, because Andrew Kitchen was playing and he's from a great family.
Just ask Alan Solomons. I loved that so much.
He's well raised. I don't understand how this didn't go their way. Actually, weirdly enough, this was the actual game, wasn't it? At Siali Pietau.
And Siali Pietau was on the field again. So Andrew Kitchener and Siali Pietau got to face off again.
Oh, my word. Imagine.
Uh-oh. Kitchener did get a yellow card, didn't he?
What?
But I don't know what for, because I've only seen highlights.
He did. I don't know what for either. But yeah, a good win for Bristol.
It can't have been for anything. anything
can't be.
It can't be. His character as a human can't be called into question for whatever he got.
Pietau was only trying to defend himself. He sees these brutes, 6'7", Kitchener, coming for him.
Yeah.
Well.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
That's that. And
just on Wasps briefly.
Yes.
Because They got to the playoff final. We were thinking they would push on. Does the manner of the defeat they had at the weekend suggest that maybe there's a slight question mark there, or do they just write that one off and go not to worry about it because they got
pumped? The answer is I don't know, because I've not seen the game. They don't look like they're missing a lot of players. Obviously, they're missing both their starting halfbacks, but Jimmy Goppeth's no mug. And also, it didn't seem to really matter who they played. That's the other thing about Wasps. So, you know, they would go with Barbieri would start on his first game and get a hat-trick or something.
Can we just get to the bottom of this? Right, so Barbieri. When he first burst on the scene, I got told the way I had to pronounce it was Barbieri. But actually, now it's become Barbary, and just simple as that. So, but it's not it's not Barbieri. That's the Italian player was Barbieri.
Oh, yeah. So what does he say?
That's a good question. I don't know.
If he says Barbieri, that's fine. Yeah. But thing is, did Jermaine Genus always... Was it Genus or Genus? Did he change that? Or did we change that?
Jermaine Genus.
Genus.
Jermaine Genus.
Jermaine Genus. But I'm sure it was Jermaine Jenas when he was at Newcastle for the longest time. Mm. Only when he went to Spurs was it Jermaine Genus. Yeah. Well, anyway, for more hot Jermaine Genus news, download next week.
Someone said Jermaine Genus is Genus is hosting the One Show.
Is he?
Is that right?
I mean,
that's the weirdest show ever, by the way. It's
such a throwback, isn't it, from like the 70s or something? Like when you only had one form of entertainment, it had to appeal to absolutely everybody.
Yeah, there was one episode recently where they had. I was just flicking around and I saw Dolly Parton on it. It was like, I mean, she basically funded one of the coronavirus vaccines. So she's, you know, not only like a superstar musician and songwriter, she, you know, she's just casually saving the world in her spare time.
How much? I'm going to say she didn't donate. She donated more to the vaccine than I did.
It was like $1 million, yeah, something like that.
It was substantial.
It was substantial. Anyway, so that's what she was on to talk about. And they said, we'll be back with Dolly in a moment. And then they went to some like, first, here's a little piece on beavers.
It's just a complete throwback. I was thinking of like terrible TV shows, which they don't make anymore. Because, of course, if I want to find out stuff, I usually go on YouTube. But like, do you remember the shows like, how do they do that? Who thought of these awful shows?
Des Lynam did that.
Des Lynam, who was the other lady?
Other lady. What you said about Des Lynam?
Sorry. It was a lady did it, and they do things like, yeah, you're right. It'd be weird. Like, how do beavers build dams? Followed by, how do Harrier jump jets land? As if you've got an audience that care about both those things.
How do they do that? I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, we should do a list of terrible TV shows. But you are right. The One Show is weird, but I wouldn't begrudge Jermaine Jenas doing it. He's one of the better pundits in sport, I would say.
Certainly in football.
He's very good at football. Footy.
At least he gives an opinion occasionally, unlike most of the BBC lot.
Oh, Gary Lineker gives an opinion. Right. He's very opinionated.
On Twitter about Brexit, never about football.
Well, anyway. Yeah, anyway, so
somehow we were talking about beaver segments on the One Show that Jermaine Jenas is hosting. Anyway, we were talking about wasps. I don't know how we got there.
So wasps should be fine, I imagine.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course they'll be fine.
Wasps will be fine.
Of course they'll be fine.
When they get a few guys back, when they get Launchbury and Will Rowlands back, they get Minotsi back, they have their first-choice half-back pairing, they'll be absolutely fine.
Yeah. Just on them, I think the surprise was wasps went on a winning run playing second teams and first teams, and we kind of thought... I certainly did, that no matter what they do, they'll come up smelling of roses. Maybe you can't do that every week in the Premiership.
Yeah.
Yeah. Am I right in saying that every home team won this weekend?
No, Harlequins won.
Oh, of course they did. Of
course Irish, they did. Exeter, Bristol, Gloucester, Quins,
five out of six.
Newcastle.
Now, this is...
No, hold on. Were Quins... Quins were at home. No,
Quins are away.
Oh, Quins are away. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, five out of six. Anyway, but what a way to christen. Well, not what a way. A win. Great to christen your new ground with a win. That new ground looks cool. The Brentford Stadium.
I don't like the seats. You know, I think it's a cheap trick. That.
What do you mean?
Having them multicolored really messes with my senses. So I first saw this, and I'm not sure if this is the first time it was done. But the first time I ever noticed it was in. Euro, whatever it was, where Greece won the tournament.
2004.
Yeah, so they beat the home team, Portugal.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Sporting had it in their stadium, which they had all the colours, all the seats multicoloured, so it looks like it's full. And it plays with you. I don't like it one bit. The seats should be one colour. Or they should be the team colours. But
be honest about how many people you've got in the
ground. Yeah, don't lie to me. I'm not a fool.
Well, I think part of it is that it's Brentford Football Club, also part owned by London Irish.
Yeah,
it's not. This isn't London Irish squatting in the stadium or just paying rent to Brentford. This is a joint venture.
Well,
so I think part of the seats was, if you look at it, it was red and yellow, which is, or I think red, white, and yellow are Brentford's colours. Well, certainly it's red and white, but I think their logo is a B.
No idea, mate.
So anyway,
can't help you.
Anyway, and then London Irish, there was the green and yeah, there was the green and the white for London Irish. So I think that this, it might be a clever way of having both of their colours of the two sides that will be playing there, whilst making it look aesthetically pleasing rather than weird. So I think it might have been that.
You'd have thought, wouldn't you, that you could both... No, I can't be bothered getting into it. Yes, I agree. It's a nice stadium. It is a nice stadium. The game was interesting, though. I thought the game was really interesting. Fundamentally, Leicester have two things going on for them. A monstrous back row, almost all from South Africa.
Well, they were all from South Africa today. Looking, starting
Liebenberg, and...
Liebenberg, Brink and
Weiss. And then they've got maybe one of the best situational nines the Premiership's ever produced. And that might be enough to win a few games, actually.
Good scrum as well. That's back. That's sorted.
Yep, that looked much better. Everything else is garbage, to be honest. I mean, what do you say? The London Irish are a... They're a reasonable team full of reasonable talent. You know, they will win some, they'll lose some. When they started playing against Leicester, Leicester's defence is completely at six and sevens. The line-out, I mean, the first line-out, the commentary team were saying, you know, they are, you know, they've been drilling this. This is Steve Borthwick's thing. The second line-out, they Irish stole it with hardly anything. You know, hardly anything there. You then look at that yellow card by Cobus van Wyk. I think that is the most stupid thing I have seen in a long, long time.
Not if you feel it got him a fantasy rugby draft win.
Oh, did it?
His opponent.
Possibly.
His opponent. Possibly.
Until the score's reset, but I'm currently winning by about 2 points.
Yeah. I'm going to say that Leicester Tigers were substantially better than I thought they were going to be. Substantially. I.e., they've got something to hang their hat on.
Solid scrum.
Solid scrum.
Enormous back row.
And a back row that can carry. If you've got a back row that can carry, you could be in business. And I think everything else is solvable. So I'm nowhere near as down on them as I was. But still, I thought some of the things they were doing were so stupid.
this is a good win for Irish. They'll be really pleased with this. Grinding out, not the prettiest. Just the one try, wasn't it? The Curtis Rona try.
Yeah,
they nearly...
Which was nicely taken, actually.
It was.
Great cutout pass. Billy Meeks hitting a nice line and then Curtis Rona hitting a nice line.
Yeah, Billy Meeks needs replacing. And what I mean by that is having him at 12, I felt like I was watching a 12 who would have been suitable playing the game about 5 years ago. He doesn't have the physicality or the presence.
Yeah, he had some good moments. He had some good moments.
Oh, he's very skillful.
And he's been brought in to cover a couple of injuries.
It's a short-term fix, isn't it?
He's a 13, isn't he, playing at 12?
Yeah.
And I think that really showed up today. What else did I think about this? London Irish's pack, they need an edge. Any edge would do fine. The only guy who plays with real passion there is Blair Cowan.
Albert Tuisui gave him a lot of... he was their main ball carrier last year. He's with Fiji, so...
Oh, is he?
He'll be back.
Yeah, Blair Cowan is actually very good for them. But do you think he does too much? So he is obviously jackling, doing all the seven stuff, but he seems to enter a lot of rucks in the nine position and then distribute the ball. And I'm not sure I'd be overly comfortable with my back row doing that.
He did a lot of carrying as well.
He did.
Yeah.
He did. His work rate was huge.
He takes a lot of responsibility.
I'd normally never request less, but work rate from a back row.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Yeah,
it's a fair point.
I would say this: he looks like the one that really cares the most.
He does. Yeah, he absolutely.
What happened
to
Sean O'Brien?
Great question, because he's in my fantasy team.
It wouldn't have made any difference, mate. You got absolutely hammered this week.
It's embarrassing.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you put all your eggs in the sale basket. It either goes incredibly well or incredibly badly.
Yeah.
He just pulled out before the game, which yeah. Well, we know Sean O'Brien's a bit injury prone. But the Irishman I would want to talk about, as I have done before, and I'm just going to say it again, the best, well, certainly definitely the second best, and arguably, you could argue, the best Irish fly half is Paddy Jackson.
Playing well, isn't he?
The difference he would make to that Ireland team is massive.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Billy, it's all about Billy Burns.
I like Billy Burns. Yeah, I'm going to go with Billy Burns. I thought he was good. I thought he kicked well. I'm not sure he controlled the game that. I mean, I don't think he... I don't know. Bits of Irish's game today looked very, very fluid and nice. But they just need more up front. They need a lot more up front.
Mm. Yeah, that'll be a weakness for him. I mean, they've got three international front rowers, which has got to be worrying for them. Kepu, Creevy and Alan Dell.
Yeah, it's certainly worrying for their salary cap. They get the two big Australian second rows in soon. That should be good. Yeah, they've got talent there. I just think Irish are, and maybe it is a product of them being basically a new team, basically coming in for big paychecks rather than being developed through the system. That might account for why Blair Cowan plays so much harder than everyone else, but they just need an edge. And if they get that edge, I think they've got enough talent here to go much higher up in the table than we originally thought.
Mm.
I like the new stadium. I like London Irish's kits, but something I just can't get over when I look around, the absolutely horrific quality of the kits at the moment. Do you remember a few years ago when we talked about
golden age of stash?
It being the golden age of stash. There are some horror shows.
I mean, the kit really sums up Leicester Tigers' demise, doesn't it? And by the way, it comes to something, doesn't it, when that away kit is the better of the two options.
Yeah, I don't mind the away kit. Actually, some people thought the colours was to do with a diversity thing. I actually think it's I think I might mention this before, the Diwali colours because of the local community in Leicester. I think it might have been. But anyway, I mean,
if it's that, they could do go on better, couldn't they, and actually pick an Indian player. I mean, that would be better than just painting up their kit. But their kit is...
It's decent.
It's all right.
The home kit, horrific.
One of the worst things I've seen. One of the worst. But they do this, don't they? Because they're so naturally blessed with their historic kit, which is so simple and so awesome, that they feel the need just to test their fans as much as possible. So they did it a few years ago with that awful Cougar monstrosity. And as for this one, it's unconscionable, quite frankly.
I'm just so... The sail kit's bad as well.
No, it's not.
It is really bad.
What's wrong with the sail kit?
All those sharks all over the front.
The sail sharks, mate. What else would you put on there?
Oh, it's not good.
It's a work of art, that.
Just looking at them now.
But sail have gone down that route, haven't they, of having less than classic kits in the same way that the extra third kit should be disgusting. We kind of know, the sail sharks kit needs to incorporate a novelty fin or a novelty shark somewhere because that's what it does now.
They've all gone back. Gloucester's I don't like this year. It's the dark red and the bright red. It's weird.
It reminds
two different reds.
It reminds me of Wigan or someone like that. It's not. I know Wigan are red and white, but yeah, you are right. It doesn't. Oh, who am I thinking of? There's a rugby league team that look like that. But yeah, that's not quite right. The Irish kit is nice.
It's all right.
You got to be happy with that. Mm.
Yeah, I like it. It reminds me of that. Do you remember when Hummel used to do the classic 80s football kits? Denmark yes. And. Now, the BT Sport team picked Bristol's stash as their favourite.
Now, I have a lot of time for BT Sport, as you all know, but they're wrong. It's an interesting kit because it's meant to be something different, isn't it? And Bristol Bears don't have any real history in their Bears incarnation. Bristol Rugby Club has loads of history, but Bristol Bears doesn't. So I think they can get away with it. I don't.
With the players they've got, they can get away with going down the Stade Francais route. They've got the players to back that up.
But only Stade Francais can do that. I mean, I've seen it in other clubs. I've seen Edinburgh try and do it, for God's sakes. I've seen Bath in a pink camouflage. You can't be Stade Francais. I do like. I guess the 80s vibe of the Bristol stash is all right. It's not the worst. It's not the worst. It's not the best. Newcastle stash is no good. Harlequins is a. Actually, no, Harlequins is rather awful. Northampton's is okay, and Worcester's isn't bad.
I don't really like Worcester's.
Well, it's all a bit negative, this.
I know it is a bit... No, I'm just saying that there are some... Actually, Northampton's is good for being classic. Exeter's is just plain, so fine.
Can I point out something which is new, but I've really grown to like?
Go on.
And it should have been in the international podcast, but it's not. It's in this one. Australia's Welcome to Country.
Yes.
Yeah, Are you down with this now?
That's all right. I missed it. I think I missed it the last few weeks, actually. Because they've been doing it for every game, haven't they?
So something very strange happened with Australia's Welcome to Country.
Was it for the Netherlands or someone?
Yeah. I actually missed that bit. It started off, as most of these things do, as, you know, a little bit of like, we feel a bit awkward about our history. How can we put it right? Well, let's do a welcome to country or ask permission to play on this sacred land and yada, 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 yada. Of course, it's a complete farce because they're never going to say, no, you can't play. But then the people that have started giving the welcome to country have done a tremendous job. And it's turned into something which I was very dubious about. It's actually quite a nice thing. So this week we had an older bloke with a straw hat on. And all he told us to do was remind each other to enjoy the game. And I thought, yes, yes, in this horrible time where we're not allowed to do anything or go out or have any fun, I actually quite like having a bloke with a straw hat saying, enjoy yourself. And most important thing is to remember to enjoy yourself. No lecture, no nothing.
No,
enjoy yourself.
But it wasn't even remember to enjoy yourself. It's remember to remind.
Yeah.
Didn't he say... No.
He said something which I just thought was a really nice message.
Yeah.
He didn't lecture me. He just said, enjoy yourself. I thought, yeah, we should have an old man do this every game. And luckily, Australia do have an old man do this every game. They had one a few years, maybe 2 years ago. I'm sure he tried to neck a pint.
I think that might have been an ex-Prime Minister of Australia.
No. It was he definitely had a beer.
There was an ex-Prime Minister of Australia. No. This wasn't a welcome to country, but there was an ex-Prime Minister of Australia who was at a rugby game who was just being goaded by the crowd and just,
yeah, I've
and
seen
just,
that one.
And just necked his beer.
He's got a bit of a history of doing it, hasn't he?
Has he? Is it
rugby games, cricket games? Yeah, there is. I've seen a couple of videos of a former Australian Prime Minister basically sculling beers.
Hang on, welcome to country beer.
You've been telling your brother that's his route to the top in Westminster.
Absolutely.
Hey, mate, if I move to politics, that could be my little USP.
Yeah. As I'm trying to find, is it called Welcome to Country?
No idea.
Try to find
Bob Hawke. Bob Hawke, schools of beer at the SCG.
Yeah, that's the one.
I'm all for now Welcome to Country. It's turning into one of my favourite traditions.
Well, on that lovely, lovely little touch with New Zealand before the Haka and the Maradona jersey. Nice touch.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah.
It was nice.
Yeah.
There you go. Lots of nice things going on this weekend. A few quick fire questions before we're done. Mark Smith has tweeted us at Rugby Podcast. Which member of the Leicester coaching team can they fire at halftime?
Great question.
It's a good question. I'm not going to answer that. Paul Simmons tweeted to at Rugby Podcast, Matt Banahan announced his retirement at the end of the current season. What are your thoughts on his career? No, when you retire, get that tattoo with your brother finished.
Yes. What do I think of Matt Banahan's career?
Oh, he's done well. For a lad who started at the second row, that Toby Booth just spotted a little something in and the London Irish Academy and said, come on, I reckon. Have you thought about wing, Matt?
Well, it's a remarkable career, isn't it? I mean, and also, we say wing, but he's done everything. You know, he's done 12, 13, fullback, both 15. Wings. You know, for a guy who played second row, he makes a mockery out of the current trend of trying to specialise too much at one thing. Or does he prove what we already know, which is being massive helps at every position? One of those two things is true.
I'm sure he played 13 for England as well, didn't he?
Probably. He was in Stuart Barnes' upcoming future England team about 10 years ago.
Yeah, when he was one of the people, after Jonah Lomu had been such an incredible specimen, he was one of the people England were looking to maybe have that same effect. He's had a great career and a really lovely bloke as well. Gareth Morgan tweeted, I think we can all agree last week was a blip and it is indeed Gloucester's year until next week.
When it will no longer be Gloucester's year.
Yeah.
Which ironically now starts to feel like that maybe is Gloucester's year. Maybe Gloucester's year is this.
Maybe this year is Gloucester's year.
No, it's definitely not, is it? They need two more forwards. As is always the case, they need two more forwards.
Yeah, especially with Pelledri being out for a while.
Oh! No, go on. Sorry, Karen.
Should we do next week's game?
Yeah. What we got?
So on Friday, we've got Bristol versus Northampton.
It's hard to not say Bristol, right?
Yeah, it's hard to not say it's Bristol at home.
Very hard.
What about if Courtney's fit?
Still no. Still Bristol.
And Harrison?
Still Bristol.
Okay.
If Bigger was back, which he won't be, and Courtney was back, and Tamina was back, maybe.
And they were at home.
And Bristol have none of their internationals and none of their talent.
Now hold on, Northampton are away from home. They've got a shot.
Yes.
Maybe.
So, yeah. Bristol?
Bristol.
Leicester, Exeter. I can't imagine the bloodbath that this is going to be.
Yeah.
I mean, if a hard running back row can solve a lot of things, they just can't solve anything which Exeter pose.
Exeter.
There's not many back rows in the world that can solve the Exeter problem.
Yeah.
What's your plan against Exeter, lads? Right, well, we're going to run our back rows as hard as we can at their back rows.
By the way, nah. Facundo Cordero is just doing what Santiago Cordero did. And I
could have had him instead of Josh Hodge, and look what I did.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, in the fantasy rugby draft.
Cheers, Hodge. Cheers, yeah. Hodgie.
But not only that, do you remember what JB did immediately before he drafted Josh Hodge?
What did he do?
Something really smug he did.
He said, guys, this pickup, he actually announced before he did it, this is about to be an amazing pickup, and then picked Josh Hodge. Left Cordero out there.
Terrible.
Anyway, but no, what a player he looks at fullback.
Who? Hodge?
Cordero.
Cordero. Right? Yeah. Fine. Not bothered.
So everyone's saying big Exeter win.
Bigger. No, I'm going to say Exeter by 8 or
40.
No. I think at home, Leicester will make life hard.
The question for me is, do Exeter concede their first try of the season?
Yeah, what is it? They've conceded 6 points or something?
six points so far.
That's ridiculous.
I think the answer is no. Exeter will not concede a try this weekend.
Yep. Wasps, Newcastle. Give me Newcastle. There you go. Said it.
Wasps.
Ooh. Give me Wasps. Wasps to correct the wrongs. And Newcastle have had two very hard-fought close wins. They can't keep doing that forever.
Fair. Worcester, Bath.
I've got a soft spot for Worcester, but
I think Bath are going to have to win.
They've got too much talent not to win.
Yeah.
I wish I could separate the admiration I have for Bath's talent from the disdain I have for Bath's team. I mean, I can't look past the names, but then I think you've got to, because they're so terrible when they're together. Tough one, isn't it?
It is. I'm going to go for a narrow Bath win.
Yeah, me too.
Is that it? Oh no!
Sunday we've got London Irish hosting Sale in Brentford.
Sale
have to win.
No, they don't have to win. They will win. They will take their gigantic, powerful pack, and exactly what London Irish don't have, Sale have bags of, and they will batter them. It's going to be Sale by 20 points.
I think Sale will win, and I think it will be a forward dominated win. Hopefully Sale can do something intelligent with their kicking. Just anything intelligent with their kicking.
Yes, quite. And then I guess this is going to be a tri-fest on paper, isn't it?
It'll be an interesting one, this final game. Straight after England-France, Gloucester-Harlequins, 4:15 on Sunday.
Ooh, interesting. This is where to have your fantasy rugby draft players from this matchup.
Neither team really likes defending. Both teams like attacking. I'm guessing it's going to be 6-6. Don't know.
Give me Quins.
I think Quins have a little bit more substance to them. Yeah.
Yeah. My thinking around these two teams before the season started was the Quins were the slightly better team. Both teams have. Well, one lost one, been battered in one and put in a good performance in one. So I'm just not going to change my original pre-premiership thinking that Quins are a marginally better team and they'll win this.
And I will go along with that and say that we're going to see in this new season. I talked about Andre Esterhazen. Joe Marchant's back. He had a little bit of time off the bench, and that is a pretty special combo outside Danny Care and Marcus Smith. That combo of centres, yes, could.
I like North more though, don't you?
I mean, no, he's done well.
He looked good.
He's not Joe Marchant.
Joe Marchant is different kettle of fish.
And he's in my fantasy rugby draft team. So, yes, excellent, good. I'm looking forward to that one. Straight after England-France. So even if England-France isn't a great entertaining game, then boom, tries galore in that one is what we're predicting. And I'll go for Quins as well, I think. And that rounds off this podcast. Remember, we've got another one in our feed already. Whether it's at Rugby Dungeon or whatever, you can find loads of interviews that JB's been doing. You can find his Rugby Pass article and various other bits and bobs. You've been very restrained on Twitter lately, JB. You haven't been talking politics and stuff that much.
There's nothing to talk about, is there, really?
No.
I mean, like,
just crack on with your own little civil disobedience in your own time and in your own way.
I mean, I can't. Who do I criticise now? I hate everything. I hate everything. I'm just down. Do you know what? I think everyone's going to stop tweeting about politics very soon, because I think now that Donald Trump has been removed, nobody really cares.
He hasn't been removed.
Okay, soon to be removed.
Do you know, I actually have, about 6 weeks ago, I put a bet on Trump being the next president.
What, after Joe Biden?
No, being the president.
That's mental.
This time around. But hold on, I saw what was coming with the allegations of all the fraud and stuff. I put a couple of quid on. I stand to make 500 quid if he does. I put a first for like a £2 bet. It was 1,000 to 1, and I went, yeah, I'll have that.
I think that's overpriced or underpriced, whichever one it is.
We'll see.
I don't know. That's meant. But here is my theory.
Anyway, yeah. No one's got anything to talk about anymore.
The world is addicted to politics.
Addicted to him.
Yeah, they were addicted to him. And I wonder if all of these people who are making such a living out of Donald Trump being in politics, are they going to have nothing to do because nobody cares now.
What's CNN going to do?
What is anyone going to do?
Yeah.
So we're going to have to
watch rugby.
Yeah, we're going to have to find our own hobbies and talk to our friends.
I think that this could be the resurgence of rugby. Donald Trump leaving means direct correlation and causation with rugby becoming a superpower force in America and around the world.
Yeah, like you'll ask people in stadiums why they're there, and they'll say, "Well, I just fell out of love with following the Democratic 5th District of New York. It no longer has the draw that it used to." So, yeah, I can see that. So, yeah, I don't know. I just haven't really felt like tweeting.
But he is at JB Moore. I'm at Cocker. Phil's lurking, and we'll see you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.